Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living, and my pronouns are he, him.
My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I just got a haircut and a beard trim.
Woohoo! Very dashing.
Looking good.
Thank you. Although this time we went with a longer beard and shorter hair up top, so we're doing the opposite.
Ooh, switching things up.
Mixing it up.
Yeah, I want to see what happens when the beard gets long. Ooh. Not like Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top long, but
No, I vote for, as long as it's well maintained, well kept, I like a longer beard on bearded people. Thank you. So I think that's a great move.
Yeah. I also noticed that all the gray in my beard is actually quite uniform,
which
doesn't happen to a lot of people.
No, my roommate has a lot of white in his beard, and it's like partially here around the chin, and then it's more around like the temples, and then it's like dark brown in the middle. Like it's like stripey. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a nice beard, but it's weird.
Yeah. This has been the Dave's Beard Podcast. Good night.
Everything all you wanted to know about facial grooming.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Changing the subject. So this week we have movies to talk about, as always, aside from talking about beards. And before we get to those movies, I want to say that over on our Patreon this week, we are talking about the winner of our summer camp horror movie poll, which was You Might Be the Killer. So we're talking about You Might Be the Killer over on the Patreon. And if you're not a patron, please consider joining for $5 a month. You can get access to bonus audio. We release weekly bonus episodes. You get to vote in polls like this one that I just mentioned, and some other cool stuff. So definitely check that out. On this week's show, we have three movies. We're going to be talking about 3,000 Years of Longing, Spin Me Round, and Orphan, First Kill.
I like the way you did that, because you definitely like the colon in there was
the pause.
I was aware of it with the way you spoke.
Yeah, you guys know I normally like to say orphan colon first kill, but I thought dramatic pause would be a fun change of pace. Anyway,
I liked the dramatic pause.
You should have said orphan.
Dramatic pause. First kill.
Colon. First kill.
Put it all in there.
Yep. You're very silly today. All right. So Megan is going to start off by reviewing 3,000 Years of Longing. And just a quick, it's directed by George Miller and written by George Miller, also co-written by Augusta Gore. It's based on a short story, The Djinn in the Nightingale's Eye. And I will give the one sentence summary. A lonely scholar on a trip to Istanbul discovers a djinn who offers her three wishes in exchange for his freedom. That is Tilda Swinton, and the djinn is played by Idris Elba. And Megan, take it away.
Do I have to? No, I'm kidding.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm going to start this off with, I love George Miller. Love. I love Mad Max Fury Road. I love Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Great movies. Two of my favorites. I think it's really interesting that he wrote this with his daughter. That's who Augusta Gore is. This is a film that he's been working on and off for 20 years. He optioned the film rights from A.S. Byatt's short story back in about 1994, because that's when it came out. So it was around that time that he optioned the rights. And so this has been a passion project of his for a long, long time. And it's a fantasy film, and it premiered this year at Cannes. I could not stand this, and it pains me to say that, because I love George Miller so much, and I love Idris Elba. I've loved him since The Wire, love Tilda Swinton. They're great actors, but this is just a slog. I found this boring and tedious, and I had such a problem. So most of the film is a conversation, and it's a conversation between Tilda Swinton's character, Alethea, who is a narratologist. And I swear to God, if I ever hear the word narratologist again, I might scream and gouge my ears out, because she says it so often, it's absurd. She's like, well, I'm a narratologist, so I can't do that. Or I'm a narratologist, so blah, 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 blah. It just was
ridiculous. As a narratologist, I think
yes.
X.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous. So she gets this glass vase and she's cleaning it, and that's what unleashes the djinn, who is Idris Elba. And she doesn't want to make wishes. She's like, I'm not making wishes. I know stories. I know narrative because I'm a narratologist, and I'm not doing it. And she's like, I'm not doing it. And he's like, no, no, you have to. And he like is telling his life story. He's 3,000 years old. He's telling his life story about his loves, the women he's loved, why he's been imprisoned multiple times in a bottle. And he's telling these stories. And so most of this is a conversation, although we do see his life and the instances he's talking about. But I kept waiting for the conversation to turn intimate. And I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally intimate or vulnerable, or reveal something about mortality and life and humanity, something. It never does. And instead, it just, Tilda Swinton finally decides that she's going to make the wishes after all. And her wish is that she wants Idris Elba's character to fall in love with her. And it comes out of nowhere, because the two of them have, they have zero chemistry.
What?
Yeah, it's so weird. They have zero chemistry. And the whole time she's been talking about that she knows wishes are a trick. She knows nothing good comes from wishes. But then she's like, well, you loved those other women, so I want you to love me like the way you loved those women. And she's like, is that too much to ask? And then they have a relationship. And it's just all kinds of no. And I wanted nothing to do with it. And the conversation that they have just feels tedious. It feels shallow. And, you know, the visuals, because this is a fantasy film, and Mad Max Fury Road set such a high standard for visuals and sound design. And I had those same standards for this, because editor Margaret Sixel's working on it, cinematographer John Seale, Tom Holkenborg, a.k.a. Junkie XL, composed the score for this. So it's all the same people from Mad Max Fury Road. So I'm thinking the visuals are going to be incredible, even if, you know, I don't like the story, even if I don't like what's happening. No, everything has this really weird fake veneer to it. And I'm like, okay, it's a fairy tale. So, okay, maybe that's why, maybe it's intentional. But instead, it just felt fake and cheap. And instead of feeling immersive, it just completely took me out of it. So I didn't even enjoy the visuals or the sound design, which is just really unfortunate. And on top of that, I also had massive problems with this, because I found it incredibly offensive. I found it racist in its depiction of Turkish characters, and it's dealing with Turkey and Muslim characters. And it felt very Islamophobic, because the characters are depicted as violent and bloodthirsty and duplicitous. And it's weird. It's a weird juxtaposition, because the film is also trying to make a commentary on racism and xenophobia that it makes later in the film with Tilda Swinton's character and her white neighbors. And it didn't work. And I also felt really uncomfortable, the fact that the djinn, Idris Elba, is a black man, because it feels weird, like this weird ownership, and like he's serving a white woman. And it just has all weird, uncomfortable connotations about enslaved people that it just never really addresses or deals with. And it's also fat phobic. There's a character who loves fat women. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be cool, because there are plus size women in Mad Max Fury Road, the milk mothers. I was like, this is great. We're going to see the desirability and sexuality of plus size women. But instead, his desire is treated as a fetish and something weird and something aberrant and just wrong. And so that felt uncomfortable to me too, especially as a plus size woman. Yeah, so I will say, on the positive side, I applaud George Miller for his ambition and his aim on this film. But wow, this to me was just a complete misfire.
Yeah, sounds like it totally missed the mark, and your wish for a better movie was not granted.
I couldn't have put it better myself, Evan. You are correct.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, it's so surprising considering the amount of talent working on this film. So, but shocking. You know, yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? They can't all be winners, I guess.
I mean, he also made The Witches of Eastwick, so I would never put that in a good movie category.
Oh, I don't think that's a bad movie. I find it interesting.
It's unusual.
Yeah.
I'll give it that.
I think it's like interesting, unusual, but yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
But I hear you.
Yeah, all I'm saying is they can't all be winners.
No, that's true. That's true.
Babe 2, Pig in the City, you know, so.
I never saw it. I only saw the first Babe, which is delightful.
Oh, the first Babe is so, as we all have talked about, is so wonderful. But he didn't, he wrote that. He didn't, and produced it. He didn't direct that one, so. He also made Happy Feet, which I've never seen.
Mm-hmm. So. He did make Happy Feet. Anyway. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, yes, you are right. Not all his films maybe are universally loved. Yeah. So this is ambitious, but yeah, no, problematic and uninteresting as far as my experience watching it.
Oh,
I trust you.
That's disappointing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm curious if you guys do ever watch it. I'm curious what your thoughts are. But yeah, it just was such a miss for me. I was disappointed.
Okay.
Womp womp.
Womp, womp.
Okay, so let's move on to our next movie. We're going to be talking about Spin Me Round, which is written and directed by Jeff Baena and co-written by Allison Brie, stars Allison Brie. Here's our IMDb summary. We got a woman wins an all-expenses-paid trip. No, that's not right. To a company's gorgeous institute outside of Florence, notice my air quotes, and also the chance to meet the restaurant chain's wealthy and charismatic owner, she finds a different adventure than the one she imagined. Yeah, I guess that last sentence does kind of sum it up, but basically she's working for Olive Garden. They don't call it Olive Garden, they call it Tuscan Garden.
Tuscan Grove.
Yeah. And
same difference.
Yes, yeah.
She's the manager at an Olive Garden. She wins a trip to the Olive Garden Institute. And yeah, she's not. I mean, as soon as she gets there, it's just like not very good. Like, they have to stay in this like cheap, shitty hotel. That's like, they have to watch these like cooking classes. They're not really allowed to go anywhere with anybody out, you know, without permission or being accompanied by Craig, the creepy fucking guy who's like in charge of their group.
Who does give a good performance. I'll give him that.
Oh, yeah. Ben Sinclair. He's such a creep. His character is, ugh. From the minute you meet him and he's like jokingly speaking to her in Italian and then being like, oh, just kidding. I don't, you know, I speak English. But he's just so creepy. And she's there with the, you know, Alessandro Nivola plays the guy, Nick Martucci, I think is his character's name. Yep. He's owner of this, of Tuscan, what do we call it? Tuscan Grove. Tuscan Grove. He's owner of it, and he's like, you know, also creepy and gross. And let's dig more into the plot. So she gets there, and then Aubrey Plaza plays his assistant, and you know, she's like, he meets her, and he's like, ooh, she looks like Connie, which we find out later is his dead sister.
And maybe. Yeah. I don't know if that's actually true.
I don't either. That's true.
I mean, you find out that this guy's just full of shit and is just trying to like seduce as many of these women as possible. And for a little while, you're like, you know that something is wrong with this situation, but you're not sure if it's like he's just creepy and gross and like hitting on people, hitting on all the women that goes on these trips and trying to sleep with them all, or like, as they start to suspect, like, oh, maybe he's like murdering them or something and making them disappear, which is like a stupid side plot of this movie. Anyway,
so we know how you feel,
right? No bluffing here.
Right. So I don't know. I guess let's get into some reactions. What did you both think of this movie?
Megan, why don't you lead it off?
Oh, I couldn't stand this.
Okay. All right. So yeah. We're all on the same page.
This was Yes.
I bet you I disliked it for different reasons from you two, though. But let's go on.
Okay.
Megan, mm-hmm. With what you were going to say.
I love Allison Brie. I love Aubrey Plaza. They're both fantastic actors. I think mm-hmm. they're really funny. They give nuanced performances. Adore them. I just do not like Jeff Baena films. And it's very clear to me the more
I think
films,
I don't either.
Yeah. The more films of his I watch, I'm like, I don't like The Little Hours. Horse Girl was fine, but it was only, I only liked that because of Alison Brie's performance, not because of the film itself. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I just, yeah, no. And I just, so the more films of his I watch, I'm like, I just don't like his style. I don't like what he does. I just don't like it. And absurdist humor is very hit or miss for me, but when it's on and I'm on board. But this just, nothing about this film worked for me. Nothing. And I like Alessandra Nivola. Like, this has got a great cast. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, where are we going with this? We're turning into Eyes Wide Shut and an orgy? Like, okay. Where, like, but played
for yucks.
Right. It's just, which is weird. Yeah. And then there's boars who crash it. And it's just, yeah. And I'm like, this is not funny. This is not interesting. Nothing. And the thing I was most disappointed about, besides all of that, I was so disappointed because I was very excited. I thought we were going to get a queer romance because Alison Brie and Aubrey Plaza, yeah. when they run off together, they have a moment mm-hmm. where there was a hot makeout session. I'm on board for this. I'm thinking it's going to go somewhere like at the end, like Aubrey Plaza is going to show up or something. No, she just drops off the face of the earth mm-hmm. in the
where
film.
Where does she go?
Where the fuck does she
it's
go?
It's so weird.
She's so weird.
Or is fired, I guess.
And but it's still, yeah. she's still in Italy. She could have come yeah. back. She could have come bizarre. Back. It's so yeah. weird.
From a filmmaking perspective, it's the strangest choice. This movie yeah. is filled with really strange choices.
Yes, I
that
agree.
Don't work.
I agree.
To use an Olive Garden analogy, this movie is all soup, salad, and breadsticks with no entree. It is a strange kitchen sink movie where they just throw... I'm not even saying throwing things at the wall to make them to see if they stick, because I don't think they
like
care.
Finished pasta? Yo.
Yeah, I don't think they... nice.
I think they are doing that, actually.
I don't think they care what sticks, because you watch this movie and it's such a kitchen sink of ideas, just so many different ideas and so many different tones that you're like, they just didn't make any decisions. They just let all of the decisions play out and none of them work because they're all so disparate.
Yeah. Yeah, this like,
is
a way better editor.
Is it a
right?
thriller? Like, is it a movie about sexism and misogyny in the workplace? Is it
no.
about some shitty gaslighting guy? Is it a queer romance? Because we start that
God,
thread
I wish.
And just abandon that thread. You know, like, is it about, you know, men, you know, using their power to poison women or murder them and make them disappear? No, it's about some sex stuff and we're just gonna kink shame people who want their orgies, but like you said, playing it for laughs. And I'm like, what are we doing with this movie?
Just leave kinky people alone.
Yeah,
well, you shouldn't kink shame people just because they like orgies. Right. But in the movie's defense, his character is portrayed as a creep outside of the orgy thing.
yes
mm-hmm.
So
100%.
What I thought of when I was watching this is the movie of unfinished ideas. It's just like you were talking about throwing things and seeing if the kitchen sink, whatever. Like, none of the ideas in this movie resolve. Like, none. The mm-hmm. only thing that sort of resolves is Alison Brie's character becomes a little bit more empowered at the end because she kicks Alessandro Nivola out of his own restaurant.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. is actually kind of like the one scene where I was like, okay, I Alison Brie is such a talented performer. I don't really understand as a screenwriter what she thinks she's bringing to this for an actor. You know, I mean, this is just, what is this story? And like you were saying, Evan, with the tone all over the place, you've got, maybe there's a murder mystery, which of course there isn't. Maybe you've got, I mean, it's pretty obvious from the beginning that there's going to be an orgy mm-hmm. because when she sort of blacks out during that conversation, the few words of his that you hear, it's like, well, this is about the guy who fucking has orgies.
Yeah, I mean, totally. Oh, yeah. It's not surprising.
Right. Well, Trisha Helfer is also like, you're so open-minded. And what's his face? I can never think of his name. Fred Armisen. Yeah, he also is like, you're so open-minded. So I'm like, okay, we're totally going to an orgy mm-hmm. here.
Well, and everyone's just kissing everybody on the mouth, which is not a European thing.
No. Also not an orgy thing.
Yeah.
Arguably. Actually, it might be. I don't know.
Yeah. And so, but... Where was I going to go with this? The thing that really made me, now I didn't really like much of any of this, but there were several things that really just made me go, what the fuck? Like when Alison Brie tails Martucci or whatever his name is, when he's got the other woman that he's taking to the boat, mm-hmm. and she confronts him and they have this conversation and he tries to gaslight her and she says, you're gaslighting me. And it's like, all right, well, at least she's saying you're gaslighting me because that's exactly what's happening. But then she has to perform this weird 3-point turn to get around. Like, yeah. What is that comedic moment doing in there?
Right.
So out of place and stupid, you know, just like, this is completely misplaced and dumb. I don't understand what you were thinking. Why is Tim Heidecker in this? And this is the character you give him to play? The fucking asshole. Like, you know, first of all, he's done that. Second of all, it's not an interesting character. And then you've got the guy who's always the wide-eyed. What's his name?
Zach Woods.
Zach Woods, yeah. Who I like a lot. And it's just like, I'm just watching Zach Woods do Zach Woods. It's like, I'm not, right. There's nothing
yelling
in
about
this.
Silverfish in his room.
Yeah, there's nothing about this that makes me. And then the whole, like, is there a serial killing thing going on with the cheap gag with the one woman who's like sleeps like she's stiff as a board with her mouth open.
Oh, yeah.
But mm-hmm. they don't reveal that until after they find her and they think she's been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then just with Molly Shannon and her medication.
Oh,
and
God.
It's just so awful. Like, I didn't really dislike it that much when I was watching it, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, this is just a piece of shit. Like,
yeah, I was enjoying it for a bit, but then I just realized, where is this movie going? It's not going anywhere interesting, and it's just frustrating.
Totally. I was just going to say about the 3-point turn, and I wanted to say this when you were talking about it. Evan, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow because it was such a good one. I think the point, and I'm sure when I say this, you're going to be like, yeah, of course, but it's terrible. And I don't disagree. I like how I'm having a preemptive conversation with you.
Yeah, you're having my side of the conversation too.
Because I know you well enough to know I know what you're going to say. But yeah, I mean, I think that was trying to show the awkwardness of the situation and kind of like so much of these situations are awkward and uncomfortable. Yep. But the thing of it is just because you can see the machinations and what's going on in the decision making doesn't mean it's actually good. Doesn't mean these should be decisions that should be happening. But yeah, it's just
it doesn't mean that you should have a movie where you think maybe that there's a serial killer, but it turns out it's just wild boars running through a house. I mean, just like,
God, what is happening? Yeah.
Which, by the way, I mean, I know that there are wild boars all throughout Europe and they roam freely. Generally speaking, in my experience, and they're all over France, they don't run through your home, you know, especially because every home in Europe is gated if it's big enough. So,
oh, that's true. You know. Well, yeah, from what I've heard, I don't know personally. That makes sense.
And when I say big enough, I mean like, you know, an 1,800 square foot home. I don't mean like a palatial fucking, you know, villa.
Right.
So...
Dave, you raised a really interesting question when you said, what is Alison Brie bringing to this as a screenwriter? And I was thinking, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know which parts she wrote. I don't know if it was super collaborative. Maybe it was. Maybe they were bouncing ideas off of each other. But something that I thought, I do wonder if maybe the gaslighting portions were her input. Like, this is how it feels to be a woman and have a dude gaslight you. Mm-hmm. And it's so uncomfortable. Because I will say, I think those scenes are written very well. They're very perceptive, done well. But unfortunately, then it's undermined by something like the 3-point turn. Like, so those moments are there and they are good. It's just shrouded with so much else that's not good. And yeah, and I have to say this because I love Trisha Helfer so much. I am so disappointed. What a waste of a talented actor. And I mean, you can argue it's a waste of all of the talented actors in this film, but I am so disappointed because I don't see enough of Trisha Helfer. And I was just so excited she was in this. And then she's in it for like 2 scenes. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah. And then one of them is you're watching her go to the bathroom. I mean,
yes! It's like,
you know, that's, hey, if that's your thing, cool. But I don't know. This is just so weird. And like, I really like Ego Wodum, and she's just like got a couple of scenes as Alison Brie's roommate. She's really funny performer. She doesn't get to do anything.
No.
Like Ben Sinclair is kind of just, this is kind of what he looks like. So he's sort of born to play this part, but I feel like I've seen him do this.
Oh yeah.
I'd much rather watch him in High Maintenance, you know, like, I don't know. And I don't even really like High Maintenance all that much. I just, you know, like it better than this. So I just, you know, Lauren Weedman is funny. And then she just is there and she disappears. This is one of those things where I wonder if like, you know, Aubrey Plaza is a busy woman, right? Maybe even for her husband, she can only squeeze in like 4 shooting days. And maybe. So they didn't get all of her scenes shot. And just like, oh, we got to scuttle the lesbian love story. Which, by the way, when that happened, I was like, oh, maybe this is an interesting idea we're going to explore.
Right?
Because it seems like for a moment, maybe part of the reason Alison Brie has always felt so like adrift in her relationships is because she's actually a lesbian. And then,
or bisexual,
like to put, or bisexual. So to put the brakes on it like that, I sort of understand it. It's happening all very quickly, and you're right. Maybe you're confused or right. whatever. Mm-hmm. But then it's just like Aubrey Plaza's gone,
right?
Like, it's so strange. It's such an odd choice. Yeah.
And you know, in real life, people do disappear sometimes. But you know sure. what? This movie is not a reflection of real life. At all, except that men can be creepy and gaslight. That's about it. So yeah. I don't need real life. I want closure and resolution with that character.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I suspect that the Alfredo sauce probably comes in a gross bag like that, which I was amused yes. and disgusted by. But I yes. really liked when she used the Alfredo bag as a weapon.
That was great.
To douse Sandra Nivola in Alfredo.
That is great. I do have a bone to pick with you, Evan, though. You criticized the film by saying this was soup, salad, and breadsticks and no entree. Soup, salad, and breadsticks sounds amazing, and that is a delicious meal in and of itself, I just have to say.
Yeah. I haven't been to an Olive Garden since I was a kid, but I do remember fondly the salad and the breadsticks. So.
Oh, they're delicious. And the breadsticks are secretly vegan. It's weird, and they're great.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah, I think that I need, you know, I didn't know this until about 10 minutes before we started the show. I didn't know that Jeff Banta wrote or co-wrote I Heart Huckabees.
Yes.
And that is one of my least favorite movies I have ever seen in my life.
Whoa.
So it makes perfect sense that I wouldn't like the other movies that I've seen, like The Little Hours or whatever it's called. The Nun movie yes. is what I always call it.
Yeah, that's The Little Hours.
The 14th century nuns, when they just swear like it's 2022 or whenever the fuck it was made. It's just like, it's unwatchably terrible. It's just such a bad movie. Like, and I've seen some of his other movies too, but I can't remember the fucking names of any of them because I'd rather forget them. So anyway. Well, I think didn't he Life After Beth? That's him, right?
Yes, he did Life After Beth.
I mean, that's okay. It's not, you know, floating my boat, but I didn't really dislike it like I disliked this, I guess is the short version. Anyway.
There was one thing I did like about this movie.
Oh.
Ooh.
I enjoyed its just absolutely chipper, bouncy score. I enjoyed the score.
I don't even remember it.
It just had a very chipper, kind of bouncy, zippy energy to it. And so for the first few scenes, I was really into it. And I was really excited to see where the movie went. And then I saw where it went. And I wish it didn't go there.
Yeah, I wonder what would have happened if Kubrick directed this instead of Jeff Bezos. Same script.
Would have been a horror movie.
You know,
we
can do an orgy. You know?
Would have been an orgy. Yeah. Would have been a horror movie. It would have been great.
Yeah. Maybe it would have embraced the horror movie elements that it teased and then threw away.
Right? And it certainly would have embraced the orgy.
Yeah. But I mean, it teased the horror movie elements as a gag. It's
right.
like everything. I mean, the mm-hmm. whole like everything is not what it seems, but... This movie seems shitty, and it is shitty. So, I mean, I guess that's one thing that seems like it is. So,
Yeah, these actors deserve a much better movie.
They really do. Jeff Banta kind of looks like Victor. Oh, what's his name? Victor. He's the professor, the lawyer in Elle Woods, Legally Blonde.
Victor Garber.
Victor Garber. Jeff Banta looks like young Victor Garber.
I love Victor Garber.
I do too.
If we're going to segue into Victor Garber love, I'm all here for it.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to like get us off on a tangent.
Derail
there,
into
tangent piece theater.
Into Victor Garber fan club.
Yeah. A very fine actor who
very fine.
Happens to look like an older Jeff Banta.
He's delightful. I love him.
Yeah. Well,
it's about all I have to say about this movie. I don't know about you two, but I'm ready to move on.
Yeah.
No, I'm very much ready to move on.
Okay. All right. So then let's move on to our last movie for this week's show. Orphan, First Kill. This is a prequel to the movie Orphan, the 2009 movie Orphan. It it's directed by William Brent Bell. It's written by David Coggeshall, David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick. That's a long name. Story credit, and Alex Mace, story credit. And this stars Isabel Furman returning as Esther. And it's got Julia Stiles in it. And here's the one sentence IMDb. After orchestrating a brilliant escape from an Estonian psychiatric facility, Esther travels to America by impersonating the missing daughter of a wealthy family. Yes, that is true. Esther, the villain from Orphan, we've seen her in a psychiatric facility, and she is murdering people. She's murdering people, and she I'm trying to remember all the she murders several people and manages to escape, and then she's like, basically she stows away with the new art therapist who starts there, and then she murders her and then uses her laptop to find missing girls, and then finds one that looks like her, and then goes to this family, and Julia Stiles is the mom. And yeah, I think the interesting thing here we find out is that Julia Stiles discovers what's going on. And not only does she discover what's going on, she herself covered up her son's murder of the daughter. So the missing daughter was actually murdered by her son, and she covered it up.
Yeah.
Twist.
Yeah. Them being unreliable narrators, was it an accident that he killed his sister? Were they playing too rough?
I don't think so.
Or did he... Or did he mean to kill his sister?
I think he did, right? I think so.
But he also, maybe this is the way it's written, maybe it's his performance. He doesn't strike me as a particularly, now maybe this is what's scary about him. But on screen, there's nothing threatening about that kid who's playing the brother.
I don't agree. Well,
you know why I think that? I think it's because Esther is smarter and more cunning than he is. That's why.
Yes.
Well, yeah, of course. He's more brute force.
He's a slimy misogynist, so that is very...
Right.
But yes.
But I mean, the way that Esther dispatches with him... By the way, this may be the first movie in which I've seen the main character sociopath me have feelings like, you poor thing.
Me too! Isabel Furman is such an excellent actor that she is so great at playing malevolent, but also evoking so much pathos that I felt so bad for Esther. By the way, we haven't talked about reactions yet, but I can't contain it anymore. I fucking loved this. I had a blast. This is so much fun. I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I could not agree with you more, Dave.
I liked it. I didn't love it. I think it's a hoot. I think.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that the twist in this might be more outrageous than the twist in Orphan.
Yeah. Possibly.
I mean, the idea, like when Julia Stiles like ran in there and shot the cop to death who had figured out, was suspicious that Esther was not really Esther.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, you know, I actually didn't see that coming.
Right?
You know how I predict it every time, but I saw that and I was just like, what the fuck?
And not only did she come in and kill him, she like shot the shit out of him and was like, God damn it.
With his own gun.
God damn it. I'm always cleaning up after my kids. And guess what? I got to have to clean up after another fucking one. Okay. Points gun at Esther. Tell me what's going on here.
Julia Stiles needs to be a villain way more often because she's great as a villain here. So
she
good.
Yeah. Is amazing in this. And I think my high point in the movie of her villainy is later on when she's, you know, she knows what's going on with Esther, and she's just so annoyed with her for trying to hit on her husband. She's like, I'm gonna go upstairs and fuck my husband. It's the best
ever
line
since
delivery.
You came back, he's become a new man, thanks by the way, or whatever.
Yeah,
she says.
That is what she says.
Yeah, I mean, I had forgotten that technically the sequel, Orphan, that the storyline was that Esther's family had been killed in a fire.
Yep.
Which is sort of true. I mean, Mom falls to her death and smashes her head in. Still Dad falls boy, to his she? Death and
yeah.
And you always think to yourself, well, is three stories enough to kill? Well, I guess if you land on your head like that,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But like the other thing is presumably the son's body who he's shot with a bolt. If anybody knows anything about crossbows, he's shot with a bolt and then Esther stabs him, I would say roughly 15 times.
Yep. That's a good estimate.
So I hope that his body burns enough. Obviously, Orphan is the sequel and she doesn't get caught for that murder. So I guess his body does burn enough to destroy the evidence that he was actually stabbed to death.
Right?
But
yeah, I was thinking that too. It'd be interesting.
That fire was raging a long time, and she did manage to walk down a fire, like a hallway engulfed
in
flames.
I don't know how she did that.
Slowly and with no smoke inhalation, apparently. Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
That part didn't make any sense to me, but it did make sense to me how quickly that house went ablaze, because I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Literally everything in this antique fucking house is probably like just so ready to burn.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't love it. I did like this a lot. I liked that. I feel like in the first movie, Esther is almost, she's the main character, but she's not the main character,
right,
you know, like
right.
Vera Farmiga and is more of the lead in that.
Yes. 100%.
Whereas this is Isabel Furman's movie.
As it should be, because she's such an excellent actor. I love
and
her.
This is the best work that anybody has done since Lord of the Rings, making a woman who's 5'5" look like she's actually four feet tall.
Yeah,
I know.
They did
the scenes photos where everybody's wearing like Gene Simmons platform boots is hilarious.
Yeah, there were also two body doubles too, which I thought was great. I love it. I love the way they did it. Yeah, because I was like, and you know, I think that's kind of a mark to show how campy this film is, how it's like, wink, we're in on it. Because, you know, Isabel Furman was 10 years old when she did Orphan, but she was 23 at the time. She's now 25. And I'm like, she looks 25. Like, she does not look like a 10-year-old girl. But I love that the movie is in on it and that they're like, oh, you're such a little lady, Esther. And so I'm like, okay, the movie is winking along with us. They're aware I'm here for this. And I really love that. And Isabel Furman, I cannot stress this enough. I know we talked about The Novice either earlier this year or last year, and she is incendiary in that. She is just outstanding. And I had actually never seen Orphan before. I watched it in preparation for this before I watched Orphan First Kill. And
no, really?
Yeah, like I knew the twist because I knew the twist, but I had never seen it. And I was like, wow, she is just magnetic. And so seeing a movie all from her perspective, I was like, yes, I am here for this. I want to see Isabel Furman. I want to see all of her films. I want to see her in everything. This is just so good and so much fun. I love the cinematography. I love all the images with mirrors. I love how when she decides that she's going to impersonate Esther, the photo she holds up with her face in the mirror and she's like giving that like, that sly, sneaky smile. It's just, it's great. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love the cinematography, love the performances. I love how much fun this movie is having.
Yeah,
it's great.
It is. I mean, I'm closer to Dave, I think, in terms of like, I really had fun with this movie. I didn't love it. I think for me, a lot of it was the pacing felt kind of off in places where I felt like Orphan.
Oh.
I love her. I loved what this movie was going for. I just had a hard time with it holding my attention for the entire time, but I did really like what they did. I love that Julia Stiles is evil in this. I love that she just relishes being evil and that they turn the tables on, you know, Esther and like really it's so fucked up what they do. It's so messed up, this like mutually assured destruction / blackmail thing vibe that they have going on. Especially when they're like, all right, I've had enough. Let's kill this girl. Like, whoa, okay, damn.
Well, you already tried to kill her with the Franks and beans, and it didn't work. I mean,
mac and cheese.
Or the not
mac and cheese with hot
mac
dogs.
Mac and cheese, thank you.
Yeah. Which, by the way, something I noticed, and maybe because I watched Orphan and Orphan First Kill back to back, but I don't think Esther is as evil as people think. And I'll tell you why. Because she puts the pigeon out of its misery by killing the pigeon in the first film. And then she befriends the rat. And I was like, I'm here for this. She doesn't torture animals. She's not mean to them. And usually sociopaths and murderers are. So I like her. I think she's just very misunderstood and just wants to be loved.
Hey, okay.
I mean, with a healthy dose of, homicide.
Yeah, you know, just some homicide. Some arson.
Some of these kills are definitely, don't know if I'd call them first degree. Let's go with second degree.
Yes.
Murder. The way she kills the social worker when she's still in Estonia, for example.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
Although that might get into first degree because she does have to tail her home.
Yes.
And then,
Yes. And then she also kills her again because she thought she was dead. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's still alive. She's like, you're still here?
Yeah, she actually says something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I just love how fun this is. And I also like how creepy and slimy the son is, like, especially when he says to her, when he threatens her with being deported because she's an illegal immigrant, and he's like, this is America, people care about me. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's a little on the nose, but I'm like, not wrong. Very true.
Yeah,
very, very true. But so William Brent Bell, I really liked The Boy that he did with Lauren Cohen, and I really liked this, and to me it's very obvious that he really liked Orphan. And then I saw an interview, actually a few interviews, where he talked about that he's such a huge fan of Orphan, and that for him, the idea of a good prequel is really digging into and understanding a character better. And so this, I saw somebody in a review say this, that this is one of the rare prequels where it justifies its own existence. And I could not agree more, because I find, because Esther definitely was the most interesting character in Orphan, and now we get to see more of her, and I was riveted. I did not have the pacing issues. I did not experience them the way you guys did. But yeah, to me, I was just riveted from start to finish. I was like, yes, I'm here for this wacky, wild ride.
Yeah, I got to piggyback on the pacing thing. And this is, now bear with me, because this is going to seem kind of weird.
Ooh, I like it.
While I was watching this, as far as the pacing goes, I was thinking of Lethal Weapon 4. And the reason I was thinking of Lethal Weapon 4 is that movie's about 2 hours long, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter, and it's got a shitload of plot, but all the plot happens during shootouts.
Oh,
everybody is shouting dialogue at each other about,
you're right,
about whatever while there are shootouts. And that's kind of what I thought of when I thought of this. You'd have these moments of like intense like exposition, and then you'd watch everything sort of play out, and then intense exposition. And then see how everything would play out. And that's kind of what I was thinking about. Because the first Orphan is like, I mean, it's not like a shitload long, but it's a good, it's like at least 2 hours long. It might be like 205, 210. And this is like about 100 minutes, which is fine. You know, I'm all for short movies. But like, I feel like we could have had a little bit more, just like, even though this is campy and whatever, I think the first one had more eeriness foreboding than this one moments, does.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the way that they played up the deaf child and like the terror of like not being able to hear. Mm-hmm. I feel like was extremely well done in that one.
Although that's also very ableist too. But yeah.
Yeah, I also remember as gory as this movie is, and most of it practical from what it seemed to me, I remember when she kills Peter Sarsgaard in the first movie, that being absolutely horrifying. So I never really felt like that when I was watching this, for better or worse. I also didn't know that the director made The Boy, which I know that good friend of the show, Dee Dee Crimmins, has said to me several times, you'd really like The Boy. So,
Yeah, I liked it. I guess I got to
see that. Yeah, no, I knew that you liked it because I've heard you say that before. Yeah. But
it's a very underrated film. Very underrated. I think if you go in not with maybe a lot of expectations, it's a fun time.
If you go in thinking you're going to see a piece of crap and then it's only so-so, all right.
No, but it's fun. It is. It's good. Yeah. And I think, anyway, I liked that. Yeah. I like this. I think there's a good vibe going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I dug this too. Cool. I agree with you, Megan. They did a really good job of like making, well, but I think both of you said they did a really good job of making her look small, even though you look at her and you're like, okay, she's clearly not. Like she looks yes. like her age. You know what I mean? Like she doesn't look like a little lady. And I like that they,
yes.
you know, just joke about that and, yeah. you know, don't take that too seriously. And I like that this movie doesn't take itself too seriously. I like that it relishes in the yes. just absurdity of the premise. And I like, you were talking about it justifying it, its existence. And I think it really does do that. From the perspective of you see her grow in terms of being better at lying and covering things up. You see her not do very well at points in this movie when she's trying to like try on some of these lies or some of these tactics and them not being successful.
The parent.
Yep. She mistakes the what is it? It's one type of bird and she calls it a parrot. Yeah.
Macaw. Yeah.
All macaws are parrots, but not all parrots are macaws.
So I really like that you see an unpolished version of her in this, starting to learn the tricks of the trade from Julia Stiles.
Yeah, valuable education.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Is anyone else sad that she didn't survive Orphan then?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes and no. I mean, she. If you think about it, she's... Well, no, I'm thinking of Esther as being a child, which she's not. She's 31.
Yeah.
So, but I think the thing that didn't work for me was the way she tried to seduce the dad in this one, because you know that that's coming, because that's a whole thing in Orphan. And this one, it just kind of, you can tell that that's what's going on with the scenes of them painting together, mm-hmm. but that's like the one part of the movie mm-hmm. that's actually understated. Like it everything is, else yeah. on this movie is like, let's go to 100%. But let's do the whole thing that she's going to fuck her foster dad at 67%.
Until you know, he sees her false teeth or whatever and then like falls off the, you know, it's like they wait.
Yeah.
Speaking of the painting, did either of you notice what I thought was a fairly large continuity issue with the paintings? So
in what
there's
regard?
The painting of the, I think it's the painting of him, of the foster father. And mm-hmm. there's the effect with the black light where one of his eyes is like glowing. In the middle of that scene, yep. it switches eyes. It switches which eye is glowing.
Yeah, it does.
And that really irks me.
Yeah, I think.
Oh.
I think it's supposed to be tears.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tears. Yeah, there's the single tear. But then it's the wrong eye.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did we not notice this?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, how did they not notice in the Untouchables that Sean Connery's shirt is buttoned, then it's unbuttoned, then it's buttoned again? I mean, how do you not know?
That's a good point.
Or that there's that one weird scene in Star Wars where for some reason Luke is left-handed for like one shot. So,
are we sure he's not ambidextrous? No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
So, yeah, but I didn't notice that, so I should make that
sure,
me. I should pay more attention
like
to that shit.
Up in arms about it.
I'm usually like fucking all about continuity. Whoops.
Yeah.
I was so mesmerized by Isabel Furman's performance as a psychotic 11-year-old that I missed the tear eye switch. You know,
acceptable reason.
There you go.
You know, it is an acceptable reason. Yeah, I think it's interesting that, Dave, you brought up a really great point about their understated rapport. And I actually felt like I understood why she was so drawn to him in this, because they're both artists. He wants to hear what she has to say. He's sensitive, blah, blah, blah. I felt, watching Orphan before this, obviously, I was like, I don't understand why she's so obsessed with Peter Sarsgaard. Like, I don't get it. And so where's this actually made sense? And I'm like, oh, okay. Her daddy complex makes sense here, but it didn't in the other one. But anyway.
Yeah. I think in the first one, it's just like, she's, you know, everyone thinks she's 11 and she's like, but I'm a woman.
I have needs.
You know? Yeah. It's very,
maybe that's it.
It's very much the Kirsten Dunst thing in Interview with a Vampire. You know, Claudia looks like she's 10, but she's actually, you know, like 100 years old. Yeah, whatever she is. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought about that. I'm like, that must be really hard.
Yeah. But anyway. I didn't think about it because I don't want to think about how hard it is. So
I spent an inordinate amount of time thinking about Esther's psychology here.
Yeah, I just, when the movie made me feel bad for her, I was just like, wow, this movie works.
I know, right? Like, good job, movie.
Yeah, you're like, well, yeah. These assholes from Darien, Connecticut had it coming.
By the way, I just want to mention that I don't usually read notes, as you know, but they shot this movie in Winnipeg in November and December.
That's
Everybody
brutal.
On this movie deserves a fucking medal. Fuck. You know?
Yes.
I mean, my God.
Yes.
Winnipeg in the winter. I mean, so, you know, so North Dakota, basically, but still, like, ooh.
That's a hard pass. Anyway. No, thank you. That's too cold.
Yep. Yeah, that's cold, man.
People in the crew are like, it's cold out here, eh?
Oh, God. Yes, 11. They certainly were. Oh.
Do we have any other thoughts about Orphan First Kill?
No, it was good fun. Everyone should see it.
I have lots of thoughts, but we'd be here all night, so I'm going to read it. Apparently, I have so many thoughts about this movie.
Somewhere in Megan's room where we can't see, there's like a cork board with like the red strings and like...
and the post-it notes, everything connected.
Or maybe you did it all in like, you know, blacklight.
Oh.
And, you know, it's actually...
Great point.
Going with the theme of the movie or one of the... Yeah.
You know, sidebar, I don't typically like black art. I really liked the black art in this anyway.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Total sidebar.
I did like that.
Yeah.
By the way, quick question. Megan, because you just saw Orphan.
Yes.
Do you remember why Vera Farmiga finds everything under the black light? Do you remember why? Because toward the end of the movie, when Vera Farmiga has figured out for sure that Esther is, you know, a sociopath. And she's in Esther's bedroom, and there's just, she's written all over the walls.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
Yep. I don't know if it's Vera Farmiga or if it's Peter Sarsgaard, but one of them does, yeah.
But why were they looking at a black light then? You know, was Esther like, you should look at my room with a black light? I don't think she was doing that, right?
No, but you know what's ridiculous? I don't remember it. I literally just saw this. Sorry,
right.
I guess
I know what I'm doing after the podcast.
I'm sorry. I wish I could be more helpful.
let's just assume that one of them was watching like Dateline NBC with one of those like black light in the hotel room reports, and so they're like, maybe I can find stuff in Esther's room.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't know if it is a black light per se, but it's behind other pictures and like something.
Right.
There's like one thing ripped or something, and one of them pulls down. Anyway, I'm not being very helpful there. I digress.
Okay, so then let's do a quick recap. So we've got 3,000 Years of Longing, which is currently in theaters. Megan, where do we land on this one? Skip it, yeah.
Oh, skip it.
I feel like you would say that. It sounded like very much a skip.
Yeah.
All right. And so Spin Me Round is currently available on AMC Plus, and I believe also in theaters, maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But why bother?
Yeah, I mean, who gives a shit? I would not recommend this in good conscience to anyone.
Yeah,
I would say skip
it. Go to
Olive
Garden instead.
Get the breadsticks.
Yeah, but don't think about how they make the Alfredo sauce.
No! Because that probably is how they make it.
Yep. And Orphan First Kill.
First on your list. See it.
Yeah. Yep.
That's the best I got. That's my dad joke.
Appreciate
Evan.
It.
Oh, I was waiting for you to say where to see it.
Oh, no, like it should be the first movie on your list to see. That's
well, Orphan First Kill is available on Paramount Plus, and it is playing in theaters. So, yes, I would also say see it, and I suspect I know what Megan's going to say, but Megan?
Yes, I would definitely say see it. It is a blast. So much
yes,
fun.
Yes, I agree. Even though I didn't quite love it as much, I still had an absolute blast. And yeah, let's see Julia Stiles play more, you know, villains. I would like to see her play evil.
Yeah,
she was really having fun with this. I was like, wow, she is really digging into this, and I would like to see more of this.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. So that wraps things up for this week's episode of Spoiler Piece Theater. We want to say a huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you for making us sound great week after week.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find the show anywhere you get podcasts, but you can also find us at our website, which is spoilerpiece.com. If you head over there, you find all the places you can listen to us. You can find a link to our Patreon. You can click on the merch tab and go check out our TeePublic store and get some pretty sweet Spoiler Piece merch. We've got shirts, pillows, notebooks, all kinds of stuff, mugs. And you can find us all over social media if you want to get in touch with us. You can find us on Facebook. We're Spoiler Piece Theater. We're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd. And you can reach out to us all those places. Or you can send us an email. Send us an email at spoilerpiece@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call.
At 862-21-PIECE.
You can leave us a message, send us an email, send us a text. Tell us we're idiots and Spin Me Round is an amazing movie. And just tell us why we're wrong, or maybe, you know, why you agree with us that Orphan First Kill is an absolute blast.
Yeah.
We'll only accept agreement messages only on Orphan First Kill.
Yeah.
But everything else you can disagree with us on.
Right. Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, maybe 3,000 Years of Longing, although from the sounds of what Megan described, I don't think people are going to say good things about it.
I don't know. I've read some good reviews, so who knows?
All right. Well, you can tell us if you like that, too. We'll also accept... except positive messages about that movie, but that's it. That's drawing the line somewhere here.
I like the way you think of it.
If you like the show, please rate and review us. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. That will take you to your platform of choice. Obviously, the positive reviews help more people find the show. It gives us some street cred out in the podcast world, so we very much appreciate those. And if you really, really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this week we're talking about the winner of our summer camp horror movie poll. And we're talking about You Might Be the Killer with Fran Kranz and Allison Hannigan. And we do exclusive audio each week for our patrons. So if you sign up $5 a month, you can vote in polls. You can get that exclusive audio. So definitely check that out over at patreon.com/spoilerpiece. And thank you for listening this week. My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
And my name is Dave Riedel. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I am on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Dave Sees Movies.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.